The presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas,
destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives, one story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
We continue to have this crazy argument over our constitutional natural rights. I mean, ever since this Parkland shooting, the news cycle has stopped. It's basically perseverated right on your natural rights. And I've actually had this conversation for most of the week. In fact, it got really heated when I basically asserted that our natural rights come from our Creator, from God. Of course, the atheist and the progressive left jumped all over me and said, well, there's nowhere in the Constitution where it says God. Well, no, it's not in the Constitution. It's in the Declaration of Independence, which sets the table for the Constitution. You can't look at those two documents separately. You have to look at them together. And the Declaration of Independence sets the table for why we build upon what we did with, you know, the Constitution. And it was really interesting, some of the responses that I got back. In fact, one of them was actually, you know, it's the tired old progressive left of, oh, the founders are a bunch of racists. You know, yeah, such a great godly document to have, you know, the three-fifths clause making black people three-fifths of a person. Well, they didn't even really think about why that was in there. The main thing was for representation purposes. And when I tell you why, it gets even better, because it really comes down to how a state is represented within Congress. And in fact, what it really came down to was, you know, why would you even consider placing that in the document in the first place? Well, they did, because the senator who was actually lobbying for it, the Democrat senator, I may add, was worried because his state had more black people in it than most. He had the biggest slave state in the region. So what would happen to his representation? Well, if that was going to be the way it was going to go down, his representation would be out of balance with the citizens that own the slaves. So why do you think he added that in? I mean, it's unbelievable that you have to put this into perspective. You know, one of the things that they don't realize is, let's get into this three-fifths clause thing real quick. Basically, it's always misrepresented as blacks being considered three-fifths of a person, or that they're three-fifths of a citizen. You know, this was in Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution of 1787. It declared that for purposes of representation in Congress, enslaved blacks in a state would be counted as three-fifths of a number of white inhabitants of that state. The three-fifths clause was part of a series of compromises enacted by the Constitutional Convention of 1787. The most notable other clauses prohibited slavery in the Northwest Territories and ended U.S. participation in the international slave trade of 1807. These compromises reflected Virginia Constitutional Convention delegate and U.S. Future U.S. President James Madison, one of my favorite founders, observation that, quote, the states were divided into different interests, not by their size, but principally by their having or not having slaves. When the Constitutional Convention delegate Robert Sherman of Connecticut proposed that constitutional representation be based on the total number of inhabitants of a state, delegate Charles Pinckney of South Carolina agreed, saying blacks ought to stand on an equal footing as whites. Well, his statement was disingenuous, since at the time he knew most blacks were enslaved in his state and none, slave or free, could vote or were considered equals of white Carolinians. So right there, what he was looking to do is kind of what they're looking to do with open borders and DACA. What he was looking to do is boost up his representation by saying, look at all the inhabitants we have in our state. Well, that gives us more delegates, which gives us more voting power. That's what sanctuary cities are currently doing in California. That's what they do. They bring in all of these people. That's why there's this outcry about the census. They're going to go after the census and say, oh, you can't sit there and put a question about citizenship in there? What are you thinking? Well, why do you think that is? Because if we count more people in the census, it changes the number of representation units for that state, which provides more representatives to the House of Representatives, and in turn, giving that state more voting power. That's what it all comes down to. And that's what was happening back then. Other delegates, including most notably Governor Morris of Pennsylvania, argued that he could not support equal representation because he, quote, could never agree to give such encouragement to the slave trade by allowing them, the southern states, a representation that would supersede what they normally would have. With the convention seemingly at an impasse, Charles McKinney proposed a compromise. 3/5 of a number of slaves in any particular state would be added to the total number of free white persons, including bond servants, but not Indians, to the estimated number of congressmen each state would send to the House of Representatives. The Pinckney Compromise was not completely original. This ratio had already been established by Congress, which had adopted the Articles of Confederation in 1781 as the basis for national taxation. So again, the Constitution was a document that was built upon natural rights by our Creator. I even had morons that were going on and on. Well, you know, what does that mean? They're going to deny natural rights of people that aren't inhabitants of this nation? Illegal immigrants? Well, they have to come here first. They have to apply to become a member of this nation. And once they're admitted membership, then they're recognized for their natural rights. Because it's not our fault that other countries have not decided to recognize natural rights. Natural rights are across the board. You're born with those, regardless of nation, regardless of situation. When you're born into the world, God-given rights for you to exist, for you to defend yourself, for you to have freedom of thought, for you to do the things that you wish are there. It is the government. What nation are you born into? What governmental style are you born into? Well, luckily for us, we're born into one that recognizes it. And they built this document off of all of these things that they compiled together. You know, Roman law, the Greek Republic. You know, they also took philosophers like Socrates, Aristotle, Plato, and what have you. John Locke, you know, you look at de Tocqueville, you look at all these different thinkers that they comprised into why they would go the route that they would go. They even took English common law, that the good parts that didn't infringe upon people. And then they said, let's write this document from a place where we tell the government what they can't do, where they can't infringe, where they can't step into. That's what it was. And it was amazing how lost people were on this. Because for me, it was a worldview issue. You know, you are lost on the fact that the right to bear arms doesn't say, you can't bear arms that are technically efficient. You know, we've already done that with fully automatic weapons in the 1930s. You know, you can't get a Tommy gun. But at the same time, the fact that they are looking to take whatever portion of that right and just kind of infringe here and there, you know, we're going to make it harder for you to load your weapon. We're going to make it harder for you to buy ammo. That is all infringement. And it's the right to bear arms, not the right to bear guns, not the right to bear rifles. So if I want to buy a tank, I'm legally allowed. Now, do I have the money to do that? No, I don't. Do I have the parking space to do it? No, I don't. I don't have the wherewithal to go buy a tank. It's not in my interest. But at the same time, I do have the right to defend myself with whichever defense mechanism I want to defend against a tyrannical government. It's not about hunting. It's not about muskets. We've talked about this for the last 3 freaking podcasts, but we have to keep bringing this home because people do not understand what these rights actually are. And I feel like we need to make this very clear. And the fact that we are being talked to and, you know, we're being demanded that we have our rights infringed by people that don't even know what they're talking about is amazing to me. Now, I'm not a big gun enthusiast. I don't care about that. I'm not going to, you know, if my interest is into purchasing a gun and the type of guns, and I'm going to get all into, you know, it's like with me with music. I know all about the history of all these different genres, metal, hardcore, jazz, ska, whatever the case may be. I can go through and tell you all the details because it's something I'm heavily interested in. I'm not heavily interested into weaponry. Now, that doesn't mean I don't want the right to be able to buy a gun, because I don't care if you are an enthusiast or not. You should have your right to self-defense available to you. We should not be watching people march to give their rights away. It's unbelievable. And the same people that are marching to give their rights away don't even understand what those rights actually are. They actually don't even understand the terminology. I mean, Morgan Freeman, this was amazing to me. He tweeted out, "Wonder what kind of Thursday Laura Ingraham is having, since Laura Ingraham was attacked by Media Matters using a human child shield such as David Hogg. You know, they were basically placing their ideology in the Palestinian school so that you can't shoot and you can't take out the ideology because it's protected by children like David Hogg, like Emma Gonzalez, like Cameron Casper, or whatever his name is, the drama kid. You know, like the girl with the hipster glasses, that, you know, whatever the case may be. She wants to take the bum stock, and then she wants to take whatever else she can get. She wants to take that extra mile. They want to hide behind that shield to do whatever they want. And so what they did was Laura Ingraham kind of called, you know, David Hogg out. Whether that was right or not, I don't really care. I'm not a big Laura Ingraham fan. You know, but the fact that they weaponized that machinery that they have built, they weaponized against her advertisers, was amazing to me. And she lost quite a few advertisers. And a few of those, I will make sure that everybody knows, because guess what? I will not advertise, or I will not, you know, do any business with those advertisers. Nestle, TripAdvisor, Nutrish, I think that's Rachel Ray's BS, Wayfair, Joseph A. Bank, Expedia, all of those groups. And you have to go further. You have to look up who owns Nestle. What else do they own? Who owns TripAdvisor? What else do they own? Who are on the board? I mean, this David Hogg kid was out there doxing the executives for Arby's because they didn't follow suit. What kind of tactic is that? They're going to go after, they're going to put all the personal information like they did to Dana Loesch, which made her have to move. They're going to do what they did again. They're going to do that to the executives of Arby's and say, hey, you better comply with the fact that you need to pull your advertisement from somebody that you're trying to reach a market with because she was critical over this 17-year-old kid and whether or not he could get into college. Really? We are going to stand for that? We're going to let that go? So Morgan Freeman was kind of, you know, he's kind of reveling in it. He's enjoying the fact that Laura Ingraham is having a bad Thursday. And he said, maybe she's waking up to the fact that young people will win. Hashtag march for our lives. Hashtag vote for our lives. Hashtag vote them out. Well, somebody responded with, listen up, Freeman. We have three teen boys. They see this exactly what it is. You Democrats are using these poor kids and the hypocrisy having Vic Mensa at the march. He has been busted for gun violations, for concealed carry of a weapon that he should not even had at a march that had bodyguards armed to the teeth all around him. To which he responded, to do whatever we can to keep our kids safe, to make it harder for the deranged to get their hands on AK-15s. Again, AK-15s. So easily. Yes, young people have had enough, and I applaud them for standing up for what's right. Name one thing that is wrong about this cause. Well, I know one thing that is wrong about this cause is you don't know the type of weaponry you're trying to have banned. I mean, it's not like they were like, today was a good day. I didn't even have to use my AK-15. Today was a good day. I mean, when you hear the voice of God from the movies telling you not to use an AK-15, it's time for everything to go down the freaking toilet. I mean, 2018 has topped 2017, which was topping 2016 in the absurd category. We're just sliding on down the drain, circling the drain. And the fact that we're watching people march to give their rights away, they give their freedoms away, all while mislabeling the weapons that they want banned, as they're unable to even explain the terminology that they themselves came up with to brand these weapons. Oh, they're assault weapons, you know, weapons of war. And they don't know anything about it. It sums up everything. I mean, this gives you every indication as to what's going on. They don't care. They just want us disarmed. And the problem is they're the most vile and vicious ones who do not understand where their rights come from. They think their rights come from the government. Well, what happens when the government has all of the weapons. Well, maybe they want to decide, we're going to take this right away because you think it comes from them. Maybe you're going to be standing in the backyard with your cell phone getting shot 20 times in the back by the police because they're the only ones with the guns. You know? Maybe that is what you think should happen. You think that, you can call 911 and sit tight. Hopefully you don't get killed, and eventually the cops will show up. They might circle the house a few times before they actually see what's going on and engage. Or they might hang outside a high school and not engage at all. I don't know. You pick your poison. But that's what we're dealing with. The fact that people are being told that they have to give up all of their rights, because in these gun proposals, which we can go through if you like, they're not limiting the scope to a single scary rifle that looks like a weapon of war with a stock on it that looks evil, looks like it's going to be used by the military. None of that means anything, because what they're trying to do is ban all weapons. Even pistols have some sort of semi-automatic features to them. Many of them do. And in Virginia Tech, a pistol was used. In Maryland recently, a pistol was used. And we talked about the fact that those incidents, like Maryland, like right after Parkland, the University of Michigan, that had that gun incident where somebody was killed in their dorm room, none of that has been brought into the picture because all of those have circumstances that kill their narrative. It's only the ones with the weird circumstances, you know, like in Vegas with the lady that's running up telling the crowd they're all going to die 30 minutes before they do. You know, it's just like with David Hogg hanging out in the classroom at 9 in the morning talking about gun control and filming an active shooter incident, which wasn't even happening. It was a drill, only to have it happen a couple hours later in real life, real situation. All of this doesn't make sense. And we've talked about this on the last couple podcasts. But what I'm getting at is when you disarm everybody, then you have the ability to manipulate the electorate the way you want them. The citizenry can be manipulated if the balance of power is reduced by taking away the one thing that allows you to protect all of your other natural, God-given rights. And that's your ability for self-defense. Back in a moment.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Okay, all right. So they're not coming for your guns. No, they're not. They told you that, right? They said they're not coming for your guns. Remember that? Yeah, they're not.
This morning, a federal district court judge dismissed the gun lobby's challenge to the Massachusetts assault weapons ban and upheld my office's authority and effort to enforce this important law. This is a big victory for Massachusetts. And a victory for everyone who has worked so hard to keep our communities and our schools safe from these weapons of war. The decision says that we, the people of Massachusetts, have the right to protect ourselves by banning these weapons. And it makes clear that my office has the authority to enforce the law.
Wow.
It's a win for Massachusetts, and it's a win for families across this state and across this country who are tired of the gun lobby trying to rewrite the rules.
So that's Massachusetts. Yeah, so they are going to circumvent the Second Amendment, and, you know, they're not the only ones. How about what's going on in Deerfield? Deerfield bans assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. This from the Chicago Tribune. Owners of assault weapons living in North Suburban Deerfield will have until June 13th to remove the firearms within village limits or face daily fines after a ban was approved Monday night. The village board of trustees unanimously approved a ban on certain types of assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. There's that high-capacity magazine again. Amending a 2013 ordinance that regulated the storage of those items. The ordinance prohibits the possession, sale, and manufacturing of certain types of assault weapons in large capacity magazines within the village, according to the ordinance. One change from the law, as it says, was originally discussed, exempts retired police officers from the ban, according to the village manager, Kent Street. Violations carry a fine between $250 and $1,000 per day, according to Matthew Rose, the village attorney. He said the fine is levied each day until there is compliance. Street said the new law is modeled after the one approved by Highland Park in 2013. That ban survived a legal challenge by one of the city's residents and the Illinois State Rifle Association. The 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals held that legislation, constitutional, and the U.S. Supreme Court let the decision stand when it declined to take up the appeal. Unlike Highland Park, Deerfield opted not to enact the total ban on the assault weapons during the 10-day window that the Illinois lawmakers gave home rule municipalities in 2013 before the state's new Firearm Concealed Carry Act eliminated their ability to do so. However, Deerfield trustees did enact an ordinance defining assault weapons and requiring the safe storage and safe transportation of those weapons within the village. That measure, which was enacted during the permitted time frame, preserved Deerfield's right to amend the ordinance in the future. This not only held constitutional by the Seventh Circuit, but similar laws have been ruled constitutional in California, the District of Columbia, and Maryland, Rose said last month. The original resolution said that since Deerfield enacted its regulations, assault weapons have been increasingly used in an alarming number of notorious mass shootings and incidents at public schools, public venues, places of worship, and public accommodation. In the ordinance, the definition of an assault weapon includes, among others, semi-automatic rifles that have fixed magazine with a capacity to accept more than 10 rounds of ammunition, shotguns with a revolving cylinder, and a semi-automatic pistol, and rifles that can accept large capacity magazines and possess one of a list of other features. Among the dozens of specific models are cited AK-47s, AR-15s, Uzis, according to the ordinance. The rationale mentions four recent shootings, including incidents that have claimed the total of 150 lives, the shootings at the shooting at Douglas High School that left 17 dead, the massacre at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs that left 26 people dead, Las Vegas Music Shooting Festival that left 58 people at the Pulse Nightclub shooting in Orlando as well. So, no, they're not coming for your guns. No, they didn't come for them in Massachusetts, or they're not coming for them in Chicago or in Deerfield. They're not coming for them in Oregon, because Oregon is passing an initiative seeking to ban assault weapons. This coming from KGW8 News. The proposal defines an assault weapon as any semi-automatic rifle that has the capacity to accept a detachable magazine and a feature like a folding or telescoping stock, or any that can accept more than 10 rounds of ammunition. A proposal to ban assault weapons and a high-capacity magazine in Oregon has been submitted as a ballot initiative petition intended to prevent mass shootings. Filed by an interfaith religious group in Portland, Initiative Petition 43 would also require legal gun owners to surrender or register their assault weapons or face felony charges, according to language released. The group said it aims to get enough signatures to put the measure before votes in November in a general election. The chief practitioners, flanked by about two dozen teenage and adult supporters. Wow, that makes it look, more official and gives it that emotional look that you need. Turned in 3,443 signed petitions, far more than the 1,000 signatures needed to begin the ballot title drafting process. If the petition passes scrutiny by state officials, the group will need 88,000 signatures by July 6th to get the measure on the ballot, according to the Oregon Secretary of State website. The initiative could also face court challenges. Oh, you bet they will. We recognize that there were perfectly legitimate uses of guns for self-protection and hunting that make a lot of sense, says Rabbi Michael Z. Kahana of Congregation Beth Israel and one of the petitioners. But assault weapons are not used for either of those purposes. Many of those weapons exist only for killing and should not belong in civilian hands. Again, you know, this is one of the things we run into. It's not about hunting. It's not about muskets. And in fact, in Parkland, there was an interesting twist that we find. We found that the Parkland shooter, he didn't even have high-capacity magazines. Unbelievable. You know, we were having this discussion online. It's unbelievable. He did not have a high-capacity magazine. I mean, the gunman used only 10-round magazines. The Parkland shooter did not use magazines larger than 10 rounds, but the gun reform lobbyists are calling on gun lawmakers to ban higher capacity magazines after the tragedy. That comes from National Review. And so, you know, we were joking around, maybe we need to have one bullet magazines. Maybe we need to, make it to where they have these child-proof lighter mechanisms on the trigger, you know, so everybody at the gun range looks like they're, you know, scratching off lottery things where they're ripping at their triggers until somebody's lucky enough to get a bullet to come out and go, oh yeah, look, I get to shoot at the target. You know, maybe we should put them in vending machines like the little claw thing for the stuffed animals. And so, you know, we can keep the Second Amendment. We don't even need the background check because you'll never get the daggone gun out. And then we can just win all the way around. We have gun control and we also have the Second Amendment. I mean, it's stupidity like this. You know, maybe disposable guns, you know, once you use your 10 rounds in the one gun, then you just have to throw the gun away and you have to pay, you know, a couple grand for another disposable gun and we can slow everybody down. Because, you know, the YouTube shooter, yeah, she didn't have high-capacity magazines either, whatever the hell that is. She actually switched her cartridges pretty quickly. So that narrative is gone. But yet, we're going to go push through with all of these narratives because it's all about the narrative. They're not coming for your guns. And it's not like we have to worry about the left. I mean, they're not shooting up baseball fields. They're not calling for, you know, the death of anybody that voted for Trump. They're not even, you know, thrilled that Trump's tower was burning down on Saturday. They're not hoping that Trump was in it. Oh, yes, they are. Joy Behar was tweeting out, oh, I hope Trump was burning up in the building. You know, the left is full of vile vitriol. And then you've got the CEO of Twitter, Jack, out there saying that we guess we're going to need a civil war because the partisan divide is never going to heal. You know, we're never going to come together as a nation. So maybe we need a civil war. So you want us to lay down our weapons and give up our weapons and give in to infringement on the Second Amendment? Are you insane? So I think it's kind of interesting that they're pushing for this angle all the while we have, you know, them calling for revolution, them calling for Antifa to, you know, attack all of these rallies as they did last year and the year before that. You know, I think we need to listen to voice of reason.
I didn't have time to write a fancy speech. I didn't have time to, you know, I didn't have the resource of a English teacher to sit down and write a speech with at school today and be, you know, brought over here, practice or anything. What I really came down here for is this. I've heard a whole lot of people in here talking tonight about this group and that group, and domestic violence and blacks, these minorities and that minority. What I want to know is, when are you all going to start standing up for the majority? And here's who the majority is. I'm the majority. I'm a law-abiding citizen who's never shot anybody, never committed a serious crime, never committed a felony. I've never done anything like that. But it seems like every time we have one of these shootings, nobody wants to put the blame where it goes, which is at the shooter's feet. You want to put it at my feet. You want to turn around and restrict my right, constitutional right that's spelled out in black and white. You want to restrict my right to buy a firearm and protect myself from some of the very people you're talking about in here tonight. It's ridiculous. I don't think Rod Serling could come up with a better script. It does not make any sense. The law-abiding citizens of this community and many communities around this country, we're the first ones taxed and the last ones considered and the first ones punished when things like this happens, because our rights are the ones that are being taken away. That's the reason why I came down here today. Gun show or no gun show, NRA or no NRA. I'm here to stand up for the law-abiding citizens of this community. Because I'm going to tell you that what's going to happen. You can take the guns away from us all you want to. You all write a law, I follow the law, I'll bring my guns down here, I'll turn them in. But here's what's going to happen. The Crips and the Bloods on the other side of town, they're not going to turn their guns in. They're going to hold on to them. And what's going to happen when you have to send the police down there to go take them? The police can barely enforce the law as it is. It's what I see. We demonize the police, criminalize and vilify the police, and we make the criminals into victims. And we're talking about restricting guns? How are you going to do that? How are you going to do that when the police department's already hamstrung? You're not going to be able to go down here and take these guns from these criminals. So the criminals are going to hold on to their guns. They're still going to have them. They're still going to break in my house, and they're still going to shoot me with them. And guess who's going to be the one that suffers? It's going to be me. Well, I'm here to tell you tonight, it is not going to happen without a fight. And when I say fight, I don't mean shots fired. I don't mean fist thrown. I mean I'm going to come down here to this city council and raise hell just like these loonies from the left do until you listen to the majority of the people in this city. And I am the majority. The majority of the people in this city are law-abiding. And they follow the law. And they want their constitutional right to be able to bear arms. They want to be able to go to the gun show and buy a hunting rifle or a sport rifle. They're no military-grade weapons sold at the gun show. An AR-15 is not a military-grade weapon. Anybody that would go into combat with an AR-15 is a fool. It's a semi-automatic 22 rifle. You'd be killed in 15 minutes in combat with that thing. So we need to dispel all these myths, and we need to drop all this division that we got going on here. Because the bottom line is, when that Second Amendment was written, whether the framers liked it or not, they wrote it for everybody. And I am everybody. And the law-abiding citizens of this city are everybody. And we want our rights, and we want to keep our rights. And by God, we're going to keep them, come hell or high water.
Amen, my brother. Amen. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
So the movie Chappaquiddick opens, and I was amazed that this movie was even being made. I mean, come on. When does the left ever allow any historical fact that goes against one of their beloved heroes that shows just their abuse of power? When does that ever get made? I mean, they made W while he was still in freaking office. I mean, when they made those movies immediate. And so they make a movie about Ted Kennedy. You know, of course, he has to die before they can ever get this movie made. But they make this movie, and when I saw the original trailer, I thought to myself, man, I'm waiting for some outrage. I'm waiting for the left to get out in front of this thing and start demonizing it before it even starts happening. But oddly enough, they just stayed silent. They didn't really say anything about it, which was strange to me. And it was weird because this is the party that made up the war on women on the GOP. Do you remember when there was, Mitt Romney was at the debate, the primaries, the GOP primaries, and George Stephanopoulos gets up there and starts talking about birth control out of the blue, as if, you know, the GOP is going, oh, you're no longer going to have birth control. You're just going to have babies because we're not going to allow birth control to be around anymore. And that was the beginning of the war on women. And I remember Mitt Romney was looking around like, why is this even being brought up? And that's the thing. The real war on women goes back further. You know, the real Me Too movement goes back further. And it's why I went into what I did on Twitter. If you follow me on Twitter, why I brought up that whole thing with Cameron Caskey, you know, the guy from the Parkland school kid guy. He was up there trying to virtue signal with his, you know, clear backpack, and he's holding up his backpack, and he's got his tampon box in there, you know, because he's going, wow, look, you can't carry a tampon in this discreetly, you know, because our rights are being infringed because I've got this tampon box in my clear backpack that we're mandated to carry in school now. And what's funny about that was he started getting into this thing. Of course, you know, his his AstroTurf crowd on Twitter because he's got like 22,000 followers out of the blue after he was instantly verified. You know, they're going, well, do you have your box of Magnum condoms in there? Like, you know, like he's going to be needing that. And he's sitting there going, I didn't know how expensive it was for women's care, you know, because there's this weird push to say that tampons should be free, and it's even that way with third world countries, and it's something with the feminist, and I've seen this on and on for a while now. And so I kind of made the joke. All I tweeted was, hey, under Obamacare, the majority of birth control is free. Or it's not free, it's subsidized, but it looks free. And tampons you can buy at Walmart, and I screenshotted where it's, you know, $6 to $8 a box. That's basically all I said. To which, at the end of the day, I had God knows how many trolls just bash me as mansplaining and you know, saying that I'm co-opting the menstrual cycle. And I start hearing that, well, you know, I can't believe that you think people use birth control for birth control. And it was just insane, which goes to show that the majority of the people that are these Twitter followers are actually activists that were, you know, following these kids because of trying to bolster their Twitter page, not because they organically had this following. It's because they're astroturfing, basically. You know, it's a fake movement. You know, these kids didn't suddenly get 22,000 followers in a day. So, you know, these idiots started attacking me on every level of it, and I'm trying to make the point that, yeah, there's exceptions to every rule. Yeah, I know people have to use birth control for other medical reasons. I know that some people have situations where they have to pay for birth control. I know certain situations where you have to pay for a lot of tampons. I understand that, but majority of the people, it's not the case, okay? So let's calm down. And what the point that I was making is from our household income, because of the fact that we share expenses and because of the fact that my wife is saying, hey, can you go up to you know, the grocery store at the Harris Teeter and make yourself embarrassed by picking me up a box of tampons? Oh, guess what? You're going to have to pick up the birth control too. I know the cost and I can relate, believe it or not. It's not mansplaining. But because of that, that war on women that I see, that, you know, that Me Too movement always gets looked at as being something that the GOP is responsible for. And it's not. It actually goes back to the people like Al Franken. You know, it's, you know, where's the Roy Moore lawsuits? You know, I'm still waiting for that. But we don't get that. We get the pictures of Al Franken grabbing the boobs, and we understand that Chappaquiddick happened with Ted Kennedy. But you know what? We don't see them attacking their side. You know, their side's never held accountable for these things. You know, it's only the Cameron Caskeys that get to sit there and talk about Me Too and the war on women and women's health, you know, because they're ripping on me going, he never talked about birth control. Well, it's women's health. Well, that's what Planned Parenthood and birth control is women's health. But, you know, it's always they're sticking up for the women on the left when they're driving them off a bridge. But it was amazing to see the people that were coming out of the woodwork trying to defend the legacy of Ted Kennedy when Ted Kennedy did what he did. I mean, these were some of the headlines that we saw. All right. Jill Filipovich, she put up on NBC News, since Chappaquiddick, Democrats' views of women have evolved. Republicans still need to. Seriously. We still need to? I mean, really? They've truly believed that they've evolved because Ted Kennedy, they always called him the lion of the Senate. I like to call him the sea lion of the Senate because, you know, it's not as though, you know, the New York Times opinion piece said, in Chappaquiddick, many scenes crossed from dramatic interpretation to outright character assassination. No, I mean, come on. Ted Kennedy only got loaded like an 80s hair metal singer, drove a chick off a bridge, left her to die, to drown at the bottom of a lake, where he ran home to his powerful, rich Kennedy family only to cover it up so he can become the sea lion of the Senate. I mean, he sat there getting behind the wheel of a car with this chick, looking like the guitar player from Wasp in that, do you remember the Decline of the Western Civilization movie where they had that interview with the guitar player from Wasp? He's hanging out with a bottle of Jack, sitting in a raft in a pool, and the interviewer's like, so, what do you feel about the success you have? And he's sitting there going, he can't even freaking talk, he's so loaded. And so this guy gets behind the wheel of this car, completely plastered, and he's got this chick he's going to hook up with, and he's going to just drive off the side of the bridge, and then he freaks out. Oh, my God. He gets out. He leaves her to die. Yeah, that's strong women's rights right there. That's women's values right there. That's chivalry. Let's not try to save the woman. Let's freak out about the fact that you're a senator. You're wasted. You're worried about getting caught behind the wheel, that you could get a DUI, that you're going to let this lady die at the bottom of a river. Let's go back to your parents and let's leave her in a car for about 3 hours where she was known to be alive in this car, drowning to death. We're going to go run back home to get mommy and daddy to get, you know, the powerful lawyers that they can drum up with the Standard Oil money that the Kennedys had. And we're going to do damage control. And we get these stupid pieces like the New York Times saying Chappaquiddick many scenes may have crossed from dramatic interpretation to outright character assassination. I mean, Jill Filipovic, or whatever her name is, says misogyny transcends politics, but thanks to feminists, Democrats are imperfectly, too slowly, sometimes cravenly, cleaning house, and Democrat senators like Ted Kennedy could not kill a woman today and get away with it. No, they couldn't. They could grab boobs and say that they're going to resign from the Senate and then just stay there like Al Franken. You know, I mean, the GOP, on the other hand, remains the party of male entitlement, which is complete BS. Nikki Haley could tell you that. Condoleezza Rice can tell you that. You know, Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin, they can tell you that. I'm sick of the narrative that these people continually paint as though they're these, you know, stalwarts of femininity. And they're not. These people will praise people who are completely void of morality and yet sit there. I mean, Bill Clinton, they sit there and put this guy up on a pedestal until today. And then they go back later and say, oh, well, you know, we might have let that go back then, but we won't let it go now. Too late. You allowed and enabled that guy. And in fact, you backed the one candidate for president who actually aided and abetted him. So you have no leg to stand on. Just because you supported a female presidential candidate doesn't mean you supported the right one. You didn't support, you didn't support Carly Fiorina. We did. She would have made an excellent presidential candidate. But no, she was a conservative. And like black conservatives who are considered Uncle Tom, she is considered not to be, you know, female enough. She doesn't get to have a feminine card because she isn't of that side of the aisle. She doesn't carry that political affiliation. So I'm going to personally go out and see this movie because I think it's a story that needs to be shown, and I'm glad it's being shown. Maybe those on that side of the aisle will finally get to see the hypocrisy of the side that they support. The millennials will finally get to see a story that shows the hypocrisy that we know of, and they will scratch their head and say, wait a minute, this guy is the guy who was leading the charge for some 40-some years? Yes, this is your party that you support, that gives you universal basic income proposals, that gives you net neutrality, that gives you all of the good free college and government, you know, perks that you want, the free stuff that you want, that Bernie Sanders wants to give you. This is your party that thinks that it's carrying the flag against the war on women. Guess what? They're leaving women in the bottom of the lake to die. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. Check out my podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Spreaker, iHeart. You can also check it out on the Roku streaming channel, the free Adrian Slade Show Roku channel. Also, you can get on Patreon, patreon.com/AdrianSlade Show. Subscribe, $2 a month, and you will support more Adrian Slade Show podcasts. God bless. See you next time.